listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the April 2024 issue of Vanity Fair magazine, which features Anne Hathaway on the cover. This is Vanity Fair, Part A. Now, here's this month's editor's letter, with photograph by Mark Seliger of Editor-in-Chief Radhika Jones. The rest of us age, but somehow Anne Hathaway still looks as fresh as her alter ego Andy Sachs walking into the fictional runway offices 18 years ago. Or rather, she looks like she just walked out of the runway fashion closet in today's version of those legendary Chanel boots. Having ridden the highs and lows of industry notoriety and attendant internet fame, Hathaway is now firmly in her icon era, wowing spectators in red leather at the Versace show in Milan and with her dance moves at the after party, and delivering classic Miranda Priestly lines to Meryl Streep at the SAG Awards Devil Wears Prada mini reunion. This is the first time I've known myself this well, the actor and mother of two tells Vanity Fair's Julie Miller, which means it's the first time we've known her this well, too. 2.5 years ago, in our September 2021 issue, we published an in-depth profile of Yulia Navalnaya, then wife and now widow of Russian activist Alexei Navalny. The news of Navalny's death this winter, while in custody of the Russian state, was a blow to all who hold out hope for a more liberated Russia within our lifetime. Those who saw the window open with the breakup of the Soviet Union in the 1990s, and then close inexorably with the rise of Vladimir Putin. In this issue, Miriam Elder, a former editor at Vanity Fair, and like myself, an alumna of the Moscow Times, reflects on the circumstances of Navalny's death and the remarkable arc of his life. As a politician and opposition leader, Navalny was by default also a reporter. His operation regularly published stories and videos exposing corruption and wrongdoing. Navalny knew the power of words and images to counter an official narrative. I had some experience with this 12 years ago when I was working as an editor at Time magazine, and we named Navalny to our annual list of the 100 most influential people. There had been massive protest and uprisings around the world the previous year, beginning with the Arab Spring and ending with tens of thousands of demonstrators in Moscow expressing their frustration with Putin's stranglehold on the government. Navalny had been arrested during those protests in December 2011, and he was back in prison in May 2012, following Putin's election to the presidency. Those were the first of many stints in prisons he would endure. When we sent him a copy of the magazine featuring his portrait, taken on a bridge spanning the Moscow River with the Kremlin in the background, he sent back a photo of himself holding the issue through the bars of his cell, opened to the page with his picture and profile, a reminder that even if he was incarcerated, his mission was enshrined in type and circulating out in the world. It was a minor act of defiance compared to the challenges he would ultimately face. But I will never forget it, nor will I forget his resilience. Thank you. Pictured here are some of the contributors to the issue, along with their bios. Nick Bilton: even after 2 decades chronicling tech's evolution, the Vanity Fair contributor was not prepared for the Apple Vision Pro. This device offered me a glimpse into the future, albeit a heavy one, he says, of experiencing the latest technology at Apple headquarters, where he interviewed CEO Tim Cook. Deborah Afshani, Queen Anne: it's very important to me that there be meaning and substance in clothing, something that Anne Hathaway and I shared on this project, says the fashion editor and stylist who brings a global perspective to her work, using fashion not only as a visual mechanism, but as a means of communication. Renee Medrano, The Dean's List: the Dominican-American photographer and director who photographed Alicia Keys, Kasim Swizz Beatz Dean, and many of the artists they feature in a new show at the Brooklyn Museum, seeks to humanize her subjects by finding vulnerability through her lens. Julie Miller, Queen Anne: the Pittsburgh native, new mother, and decade-long Vanity Fair contributor first met Anne Hathaway at a High Vibrations restaurant in Manhattan, where she was sent home by the actor, a mother of two, with pureed squash for her 9-month-old Henry. Matthew Brooks, Turner Classic: the England-born, South Africa-raised photographer is fascinated with the movement of the human form. His work transcends the celebrity sphere, but his congruence lies in the emotion he's keen to find in each subject. Kara Warner, Turner Classic: Callum Turner has a charming, slightly cheeky way about him that draws you in, says the L.A.-based Vanity Fair contributor, who's covered entertainment for nearly 2 decades and remains grateful for the pinch-me moments this wild job has provided. In the Vanity Fair agenda of promotions and events, an event, George Smith hits the red carpet at Vanity Fair's Oscar party. George Smith is thrilled to unveil its collaboration with Vanity Fair to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the Oscar party. The showcase of exceptional upholstered furniture pieces like that sofa featured here along with the ottoman was hand-selected by the party's design team, designer Will Cooper and architect Basil Walter, featuring pieces from the iconic George Smith Kilim collection. This year's party promised the ultimate in English style and comfort for guests who were viewing the ceremony or looking for a respite after mingling about the star-studded affair. The event was not only a spotlight for the stunning array of furniture, but also offered a post-party sale, allowing enthusiasts to bring a touch of Hollywood glamour into their homes. Amanda Barrett, director of sales and marketing at George Smith, reflected on the partnership, working with Will, Basil, and the Vanity Fair team to deliver the vision of old Hollywood glamour for the iconic Oscar party this year has been immense fun. It's a wonderful partnership, full of synergy and a shared passion for celebrating monumental moments. Echoing the sentiment, Cooper remarked, "I think George Smith is the modern icon of the very storied world of English furniture, and Vanity Fair is the publishing icon that delivers the most important cultural narrative today. Two icons, one space. What more could you ask for?" London Bridges by Brett Hinemuth, with indie cred and an upcoming blockbuster, Nico Parker is living the teenage dream. Photo of Nico wearing clothing and sunglasses by Dior. Nico Parker, daughter of Tandy Newton and writer-director Ole Parker, grew up twiddling her thumbs on film sets. There's a lot of sitting around, so I just thought it looked genuinely dull. But at the age of 11, an audition for Tim Burton's Dumbo changed everything. Now the 19-year-old is winning accolades for her Sundance breakout, Suncoast, preparing to suit up for a live-action How to Train Your Dragon, and chasing that feeling that I can't find anywhere other than when I'm surrounded by like-minded people working on set. Born in London, she was skeptical about Hollywood, even when Newton invited her and her sister to the set of the film Retreat to watch a scene in which Newton got shot. She did a wonderful job, but with the CGI and the fake wound, we were laughing so hard we actually had to be escorted off. She's still close with her co-stars from HBO's smash hit The Last of Us. Pedro Pascal is very important to me as a human being. Bella Ramsey's so wonderful. We speak, always celebrating their wins, and there's a lot of them. She's struck by how good her co-star Laura Linney is in Suncoast. It's maddening, as well as her own youthful confidence. I've been beaten down in the past 2 years, she jokes, but I really like watching a 17-year-old me just going for it and showing all the colors of being a teenager. Her father and younger brother told her over FaceTime that she'd won Sundance's Breakthrough Performance Prize. I just started crying. I didn't even know it was a category, so it felt like the perfect way to find out. She's adjusting to blockbuster life on the Dragon set, thanks to a green room filled with chocolate. Going from a small indie to this is slightly daunting, but I love it. The ultimate Beyoncé fan would be too nervous to break bread with her idol, but does hope to meet Greta Gerwig again. After seeing Barbie 6 times, I joked with her that I was the reason she made $1 billion. Then I was like, I didn't mean it like that. Of course you made $1 billion, but maybe I did help you by going. Hit Refresh by Daisy Shaw Ellis. Photograph by Joe Metzen Scott. Prada Re-Edition 1978 Bag. For Prada, 1978 was a year worth commemorating. It's when Miuccia Prada took the helm from her mother, met Patrizio Bartelli, who had become Prada's co-CEO and is now chairman of the board, and debuted the house's first nylon design, a near-instant classic. Now the material is a vehicle for Prada's sustainability efforts. This khaki and petal pink purse, pictured here, a play on a 1978 silhouette, is made almost entirely, except for the leather trim, from a regenerated nylon yarn woven from plastic landfill and ocean pollution. It's Mrs. Prada to a T, feminine, utilitarian, innovative, and deliciously offbeat. Now this from Aramida Diop, Inner Voice. Jerome Ellis adds their voice to a bright cacophony. At the Whitney Biennale, entitled Even Better Than the Real Thing, and comprising more than 70 artists, co-curators, and organizers, Chrissy Isles and Meg Onley brought together what they have described as a dissonant chorus. Among the voices is Jerome Ellis, whose practices, music, performance, writing, explore time, disfluency, and the inclusive futures of disability justice. Ellis has two site-specific works in the survey, a score written following the show's opening, and a text-based billboard in Mandarin, Spanish, and English, in which symbols represent the pauses and repetitions of stuttering. And this is a note to the listener, that is significant because Jerome Ellis writes his name Jerome Ellis with lots of capital J's at the beginning, even though it's pronounced Jerome Ellis. Now back to the article. To design the billboard, Ellis formed a collective with doctoral student Gia Bin, poet Delicia Daniels, designer Connor Foran, and speech therapist Crystal Kubart. Because the Biennale is, for me, it's so much about the plural, Ellis says, about the multiple. I'm honored to be able to be one voice among many. And accompanying this inner voice article is a photo of Ellis playing the saxophone. going poof. The hair of the moment has the volume turned all the way up, courtesy of big personality dues that evoke the plumage of 1960s doyens by Laura Regensdorf. In the photos, Kristen McMenemy sports a bouffant styled by Kenneth for a 1995 editorial in Italian Vogue. And this photograph is by Stephen Mizell. Also pictured here are Zora Hair Hairspray, Szechuan Ocean Mist Volume Hair Mousse, and Root Lift Spray. Hours before Guest descended on the Plaza Hotel for Truman Capote's 1966 black and white ball, the nearby salon run by Kenneth Battelle hummed like a wartime munitions factory. A master of discretion, whose clients included Jackie Kennedy and Marilyn Monroe, the mononymous Kenneth played sculptor and traffic cop. We had a lot of wives, ex-wives, and mistresses that we had to hide in different places, he later recalled. Some of these hairdos required up to 7 hair pieces at a time. The so-called Svengali of the silver scissors had his finger on the pulse of high society, conjuring bouffants that acted like manicured hedges, beacons of elegance and reserve. Babe Paley, a Kenneth regular portrayed by Naomi Watts in FX's feud, Capote vs. the Swans, epitomized this lofty perfection. The production's wig designer, Chris Clark, who also styled Watts, recreated that silhouette. A self-professed research nerd, he likes to use a period-style setting lotion while simulating the effects of a hood dryer. Then I tease and smooth and tease and smooth, he says, and really try to find Babe. Puffed-up coifs are turning heads elsewhere. Palm Royale, the Apple TV Plus show set in late 60s Palm Beach, presents an array of towering salon dues. Kristen Wiig plays a bumbling striver with DIY pin curls. Her level of finesse is a little bit off, says hair department head Karen Bartek, who looked after Wiig. For Schiaparelli's Spring 2024 runway, Guido Palau crafted a pair of bouffants. Designer Daniel Roseberry is a Texan, after all, aided by hair pieces and a new Zara hairspray. I'm attracted to doing these extreme sculptures, Palau says, because they are so in your face. To him, a proper set is more subversive than half-shaved pink hair. Amplified volume, with its feminine edge, has a way of declaring, I'm here, says Mara Rozek, whose hair care line Roz added a clean propellant roofed root lift spray this awards season. It can boost a soft blowout, as she showed on Emma Stone for the Golden Globes, or be dialed up a la Amy Winehouse, the subject of an upcoming biopic. Going rogue is an appealing tack, to judge from Marc Jacobs' Spring 2024 show, where hairstylist Duffy layered wig upon wig for cloud-like coifs inspired by Diana Ross and Elizabeth Taylor, more punk than polished. That irreverence lurked in writer and gal about town Sarah Hoover's teased updo for a recent Chanel event near the plaza. On Instagram, the wry and very pregnant Hoover mused, have we considered what might happen if we just let the mob wives and the swans join forces against the husbands?
Thank you.
Now here's what's trending. Westworld. Georgia O'Keeffe called the American Southwest her spiritual home. Its sweeping vistas, bleached bones, and vibrant vegetation feeding her meditations on life, death, and rebirth. Here, a material ode to one of her 1930s landscapes, anything but deserted. In the photos, Ram's Head and White Hollyhock, New Mexico, as seen in Georgia O'Keeffe in the West, published by Callaway Arts and Entertainment, edited by Doris Bry and Nicholas Callaway. Urban Cowboy, Prada Jacket, Uniform Object Ring, Celeron by Anthony Vaccarello set, Bobby Brown Cream Liner in Jungle, Louis Vuitton Men's Sunglasses, Longines Watch, Salomon Sport Style Shoes, Elia the Base Face Milk, Sherman Field Necklace, LePoint Pants, Still Here New York Top, Kite Belt, Sandor the Grounding Hair Oil and Reusable Pump, Sandor Gua Sha Tool, Fendi Bag. tuned in. New surveys explore the varied legacies of two artistic icons by Araminta Diop. In the photos, Yoko Ono with Glass Hammer, 1967, Max Weber's Invocation, which George Gershwin acquired in 1933, and Ono's 1965 performance announcement. Hear the name George Gershwin, and it likely summons with it the ragtime-inflected piano riffs of the composer's 1924 classic. But George Gershwin and Modern Art, A Rhapsody in Blue, which accompanies an exhibition at the Baker Museum, draws attention to other measures of Gershwin's multi-hyphenate life. Photographer, muse, collector of Picasso, Rouault, Weber, and more, and painter. Of course I can paint, Gershwin once boasted. If you have talent, you can do anything. I have a lot of talent. Across the pond, another survey, blending the aural and visual, greets visitors to the Tate Modern's Yoko Ono Music of the Mind, which runs through September 1st and features scores, film, installations, and prompts, such as to attach a photograph to the My Mommy is Beautiful Redux, first realized in 2004 from the artist's seven-decade career. In the rich catalog by the same name, Ono's feminism, anti-war activism, and environmentalist ideals serve as another invitation to read, to wish, to act, even to listen. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. And by the way, that is Eastern Daylight Saving Time. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selections by Mark Hoffman.